There's Music in the Air, usually presented at this time on most of these same stations, will not be heard tonight because of the special broadcast which follows immediately.
The CBS Radio Network brings you the fifth in its series of Feature Project Productions. Once again, Feature Project reporters have undertaken a full-scale investigation of an important nationwide problem. Once again, a factual report tape recorded across the country as CBS Radio brings you The Quacks. Produced in cooperation with the United States Food and Drug Administration, this is a report on charlatan practitioners and quack cures. Here in their own words, in their own voices, are the sellers of nostrums, the merchants of the guaranteed cure. Here are the methods they use and the menace they represent. Listen now to The Quacks with CBS Radio correspondent Bill Downs.
The facts speak for themselves. The viciousness, the cynicism, the basic cruelty of the quacks and charlatans who prey on human gullibility is told in the tape-recorded voices you will hear. It is not necessary for us to enlarge upon them. Our investigation found mystical machines that would cure anything that ailed you. We found the sellers of nostrums, complete recovery from anything, guaranteed. We found the psycho quack whose double talk and mumbo jumbo covered his basic vulturous characteristics. We found the cancer quack, the callous charlatan whose fertile field is human misery and whose harvest is dollars and death. Let's go first to the machines, the devices that will cure you of whatever ails, and the hucksters who operate them. First, a demonstration. The demonstrator, Charles A. Herman, chief of the New York District of the United States Food and Drug Administration.
The device here is the Spectrochrome machine, which was put out by the Spectrochrome Institute, operated by Dinshaw P. Gattielli. Now, the theory of this machine was that there is no such thing as disease. A person merely suffers from imbalance, and that this imbalance can be cured by means of attuned light color waves. For different conditions of imbalance, different colored glasses were recommended. There, now you have a combination of two colors.
An interesting machine, a machine that cures imbalance by flashing colored bulbs at you. Did you notice that Mr. Herman of the Food and Drug Administration had mentioned a name, the Spectrochrome Institute, operated by Dinshaw P. Gattielli? We noticed it too when we first heard of it, so we became interested in Mr. Gattielli. We set out to find him, and we did, in a town called Malaga in New Jersey. But before we talked with him, we checked his background. We found that he claims to be the inventor of the spectrochrome machine, that he claims to be the founder of a medical theory that he calls spectroscopy. We also found that on January the 7th, 1947, Mr. Dinshaw P. Gattielli was convicted in Camden, New Jersey, under the Federal Food and Drug Act, that he had been put on probation for 5 years, and that this probation period had ended as recently as May 1953, just about 10 weeks ago. We thought he would be an interesting man to visit. He was.
My name is Dinshaw, which means the king of duty. I'm a Persian Zoroastrian by descent. We are the ancient sun worshippers and fire worshippers of ancient Persia, who about 1400 years ago were thrown out by the Mohammedan Arabian invasion. And we went to India, but I'm not a Hindu. Spectrochrome is a system of healing human or any disorders of the human body by means of specific certain rays of light and color. It is a development of 30 years of my study in spectroscopy and the physical sciences. I thought out this way. I said to myself, if medical doctors give certain chemicals to produce certain chemical effects on the human body, And if different elements give out different color lines, then why not throw those colors on the human body and produce the chemical effect from the body itself? We never use the word cure. There is no such thing as a cure of anything in the world. Everyone has to die.
Not everyone would agree with Mr. Gaudioli. Certainly not a man like Mr. Robert C. Stanfill, who is chief of the Philadelphia office of the Food and Drug Administration. Mr. Stanfill's district includes the town of Malaga, where Dinshaw P. Gaudioli lives, and Mr. Stanfill's interest in Mr. Gaudioli is not just a passing one.
He was a native of Bombay, India. Had very little formal education. As a matter of fact, his schooling stopped at the age of 8. And came to this country in 1899, I believe. He bought himself an M.D. diploma for 400 rupees, and he had quite a collection of degrees that he bought from different diploma mills. He had a record of having received 5 diplomas from one institution in Iowa in one day.
A man who receives 5 diplomas from one institution in one day is a truly remarkable man. We were afraid that we might have missed some of his exceptional qualities on our first visit, so we went back and asked Mr. Gaudioli about his phenomenal intellectual accomplishments.
All my degrees that were granted unto me in this country were as honors for my proficiency in those subjects. I have never been a student in any college. I was always a teacher.
Any man who was never a student but always a teacher must certainly have written a book. Mr. Gaudioli has written several literary works. The one that interested us most was his encyclopedia. Mr. Stanfill of the FDA in Philadelphia has read the encyclopedia.
The encyclopedia was a 3-volume compilation of material giving the so-called science of spectrochrome and directions for its use for various diseases. It was couched in language which was designed to prevent complications with medical practice laws. Normalator was a term that was used instead of a practitioner. That was also to avoid the medical practice laws. It also contained a lot of so-called case histories. The encyclopedia itself gave us the names and addresses of a number of people whom Gaudioli represented as having been cured of such serious diseases as diabetes, blindness, paralysis, and almost every serious disease in the medical science.
When we saw the encyclopedia, Mr. Gaudioli somehow seemed to lose some of his picturesque quality. For here in his testimonial section were the pictures of people, people who were sick, diseased, crippled, and blind. And these were people whose suffering he claims to have cured. We sent out some of our reporters to see if they could find any of these people. And while they were out searching, we went back to Mr. Stanfill. How big an operation was this, we wanted to know. How widespread?
Well, a total of almost 10,000 of these devices were sold at prices ranging from $90 up to $1,000 for some of the attisometers. Some models of the spectrochrome sold for several hundred dollars. In addition to that, the encyclopedia was sold for $15. There was a yearly membership fee for enrolling in the organization, and there was a fee of about $150 for taking a course to become a normalator. There were 8 areas called planets with meeting places where the normalators met simultaneously once a month. These were located at Milwaukee, Detroit, one in St. Louis, one in Merrill, Wisconsin, one in New York, one in Allentown, Pennsylvania. There was one on the West Coast in Portland, Oregon. In other words, it was countrywide.
Mr. Gaudioli and his machines and his theory of spectroscopy were not a small operation. 10,000 machines. How many patients can be treated by 10,000 machines, and what happens to them? One of our men had tracked down a case of a former patient of the spectrochrome treatment. The patient was one of those listed in the testimonial section of Mr. Gaudioli's encyclopedia. This is what the encyclopedia says. The injections given in hospitals have made her blind. In a few weeks, spectrochrome pulled her out of her disorders. The paralysis disappeared with complete restoration of eyesight. This is Gaudioli's encyclopedia. This, however, is the girl's father.
Well, as recommended, I was looking around for somebody to cure my daughter to bring her sight back. I worked very fast on it, trying to find a cure while she was young. But I think it was about, she was 11 or 12 years old, because she was all right up till she was 9 years old, and she started to lose her sight. Now, she wasn't all blind when she was down there, but she went blind. The whole sum and substance, the whole treatment was a fake, that's all. Just simply pure fake.
And this is the girl's mother.
He could give it to you. And he tried to twist you, but Florence wasn't cured. It wasn't only my little girl. There's lots of others besides, because lights like that can never cure people. Never. Florence never talked much. Florence would lay with her little head on her arm on the chair. She was the sweetest little girl that ever lived. She was 28 when she died. She was a grand girl.
A quack, a cure machine, a patient, and a tragedy. And this is only one case. To the father and the mother, the deepest possible, most profound sorrow. To the writer of the encyclopedia, a girl's picture and a false testimonial. What does the law do about a man like that?
The inventor of this spectrochrome machine was prosecuted in federal court for misrepresentations of this device, and after a long trial was convicted, and not only fined but was enjoined from selling any more of these in interstate commerce. All literature was impounded by the court.
That was what happened in 1947. Now Mr. Gaudioli's 5-year probation period is over. During the last 10 weeks, he has been free to think about his future. What is the current status of the spectrochrome operation? Well, Mr. Stanfill of Philadelphia was interested enough to find out.
Before he was sentenced and put on probation, a new organization took over promotion of the system of so-called healing and the selling of very similar machines in Milwaukee. The latest thing we had on the Milwaukee operation was that it was being confined to sales strictly within the state.
With Mr. Gaudioli in Malaga, New Jersey, and the pattern of his spectrochrome operation being followed in Milwaukee, we wondered if the future would bring these two together again. We thought the best way to find out was to ask Mr. Gaudioli. First, we asked him about his current activities.
I'm still in the same business, notwithstanding the tremendous opposition and persecution and prosecutions through which I went. There are approximately over 11,000 of my equipments called spectrochromes in daily use. I have graduated between 300 and 400 medical doctors and scientific-minded people also. And I have a large clientele all the world over.
And the operation in Milwaukee?
Now I'm going to Milwaukee to take over the charge of all the machines and the principals and all the cash and everything.
And how does a man like Dinshaw P. Gaudioli take over after a 5-year rest?
I have given a notice in print to our friends who want to hear my science. This is what I wrote to them. This is to inform you, dear friend, that Colonel Dinshaw will deliver 3 public lectures on the wonders of the visible spectrum with illustrations and experiments at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, beginning Friday, August 7, 1953, ending Sunday night, August 9, 1953. There is no admission fee, and you are cordially invited with your friends to be present. Yours for happiness in every home, Visible Spectrum Research Institute, Dinsha Pigadiali president.
Yours for happiness in every home.
She was the sweetest little girl that ever lived. She was a grand girl.
Dinsha Pigadiali is back in business. He is not the only one doing business with a machine. In Los Angeles, California, is an office known as the Drown Laboratories, operated by Mrs. Ruth Drown. Her machine is different from the spectrochrome, but its intent is very much the same. Mrs. Drown, if you ask her about the machine, as we did, describes it this way.
The Drown radiotherapy treatment includes the diagnosing instrument, the treating instrument, and the photographic, which we call radiovision. It does pick up the energy through the radio process and gives us a vision of the part we're tuned into. We have nine dials. In the first place, there are only nine numbers. You cannot, in anything you're using, you have just nine numbers to deal with. So we have nine dials, and each dial is calibrated from 0 to 10, or the first dial from 10 to 100. So from 0, 10 to 100, I should say. By combining these rates through research, we have found that the different parts of the body pass through the instrument at certain combinations of rates. The blood is used as a crystal only because in radio and television, they're now using crystals to separate the programs. And this is used in the same manner, but it is not done from a quartz crystal, but from the crystal of the patient's energy after it's been put on a blotter and dried. After we have the crystals of the blood, we can take a diagnosis from that, find out how much life force and energy is passing through the different parts of the body, and we can also use the same crystal to put in our photographic instrument and take the picture of the part of the body involved. They don't have to be in the room or anywhere around if we have the crystal of their blood. The crystal of the blood tunes into their energy because their energy is traveling with the Earth's currents at all times, out and back to their body. Every little atom has an energy that goes out from it and back to it.
Sound convincing? Many of her patients think so. But Dr. Robert Heller, chief physicist of the United States Food and Drug Administration in Washington, does not think so.
Dr. Drown's description of the scientific principles and construction of her diagnostic and therapeutic device would appear quite comical to a scientifically trained individual, and is quite comical. The Ruth Drown machine is not a transmitter. It does not possess the minimum components required for a transmitter. A drop of blood, says Dr. Drown, is capable of emanating radiations which can be tuned into, and as a result of specific settings of the dials, indicate what diseased condition exists in the human body. We have established that the device cannot tune into radio waves. There is no detectable type of radiation in meaningful quantity coming out from a drop of blood. Let us take Dr. Drown's statement that she is capable of transmitting a treatment from her device to a person situated thousands of miles from the physical location of her office or the device itself. The Drown machine has no connection to any outside source of power. It is not capable of generating any power whatsoever, according to Dr. Drown's statement, that the energy is taken from the body of the person itself. This device is an out-and-out fraud.
The machine that can diagnose your disease, no matter where you may happen to be, and which will restore your natural balance, this machine, says Dr. Heller, is an out-and-out fraud. Mrs. Drown, like Dinsha Gaudielli, has had her day in court. In September of 1951, a federal action was brought against her. Dr. Heller of the FDA tells us all about that.
The federal government brought a lawsuit against Dr. Drown in the Southern District of California, basing its charges upon the fact that this device was misbranded according to the Food and Drug Act. A criminal misbranding trial took place and Dr. Drown was fined a maximum penalty of $1,000. The action taken by the United States government against Dr. Drown was based on her shipping in interstate commerce one of her devices to a woman in Illinois who was suffering from cancer. Dr. Drown claimed that the use of this device by the woman would cure her cancer. It might interest you people to know that within the last 3 weeks, this woman has died of cancer of the breast.
All right, Dr. Heller. The Drown device is declared by the federal court to have been misbranded. The Gaudielli Spectrochrome is declared by the federal court to have been misrepresented. Patients who have been treated by these devices instead of by reputable medical methods have died. But these machines are still in use today, August 1953, and our two-month investigation has revealed at least eight other similar devices. What about it, Dr. Heller? Why does it happen?
The tragedy in using these devices lies in the fact that people who could be benefited by established methods of medical therapy are gullible enough to rely upon worthless devices for treatments. The federal government cannot interfere with the sale or manufacture of a device of this sort within a state. We hope that sufficient interest can be evoked that local action might be taken against devices of this sort within state boundaries.
While some of our CBS radio reporters were investigating the cure machines, others were working along different lines. We introduce you now to a naturopath. In many states, practitioners may call themselves naturopaths without the formality of getting licenses. Many states refuse to license naturopaths. They describe themselves as drugless healers. Some of them advertise their wares. Diagnose, guarantee cures. When you meet this particular naturopath, it will be something of a surprise to him, because our reporter sought his help as a patient, had a hidden microphone that recorded their conversation. Our reporter posed as a patient with a bad heart. The practitioner took his pulse beat, and from that alone verified the diagnosis, bad heart. His diagnosis accomplished with dispatch, he proceeded briskly to offer his cure.
All right, the first thing you do is you stop smoking and stop eating.
Stop eating?
Yes.
Shouldn't eat either?
Yes, stop eating. A complete fast. As soon as you do that, then your body starts in burning of what you've got now, or already got in your blood.
I see.
Isn't that simple?
It is. It's very simple. Well, how long do I have to stop eating, though?
The sooner you stop eating, the faster you pick this up. You want to do it a good job of it, you should take 7 days.
7 days without food?
Yes. 7 days.
Now, will that show my heart condition?
That will get you out of bed.
Well,
now, that's what you want. That's
right.
Anyhow, that's what you want, is to get you out of bed so that you can go out to work.
Right, but how about my heart? I mean, will I get any better as a result of this?
How could you do anything but get better? Either get better or stop.
7 days without any food for a patient with a bad heart. And the prediction? You will either get better or starve. For the sake of the record, our man had been examined by a reputable medical doctor on that same day and was declared to be in good health. What would have happened to him if he really had a bad heart? And here's another quick cure artist. Dr. Lynn Brinkley of 355 South Broadway, Los Angeles, is a chiropractor. In California, under the state laws, a chiropractor may not administer drugs or perform surgery. He may, however, use some other healing methods. Well, one of the things a chiropractor may do is to give colonic irrigations. Dr. Brinkley, through wide advertising, a business-like administration, and mass production techniques, has made the most of the colonic. Our investigator in Los Angeles has compiled some background data on Dr. Brinkley.
Dr. Brinkley's office is called the New Yorker Technique, and it's a big-time operation. They were giving around 6,000 treatments a month. He has his billboards plastered all over the city and in the suburbs of Los Angeles. No matter what trouble that you have, Dr. Brinkley has only one main treatment. He gives you a colonic irrigation. Brinkley himself didn't start the New Yorker technique. He took it over from a man named John R. Osborne, a former convict and ex-confidence man. He turned the place over to Brinkley, and Brinkley continued to operate it. Brinkley was a former fire truck driver out in Huntington Park, and the Better Business Bureau in Los Angeles spent a long time investigating the claims made in Mr. Brinkley's advertisement. They came up with a finding that he made a number of false claims. They so publicly reported.
When we received this information, we sent another of our reporters to the Brinkley offices, again as a patient. Again, he had a hidden microphone, but something went wrong.
Here's that Dr. Brinkley report you asked for. No hidden microphone record on this one, though. They took my clothes from me, and with the clothes went the mic. I was given a fast examination for heart condition and blood pressure. The first man to look at me said my heart beat 40 strokes a minute too fast. He told me my blood pressure was 15 degrees below normal. Another practitioner put a fluoroscopic viewplate over my stomach. He and the nurse both gasped at the same time. Take this man and put him on the table, the doctor said. She gave me a colonic irrigation. During the treatment, the practitioner came in and told me that my heart was enlarged to 3 times its normal size. According to him, my stomach is abnormally placed. He told me that a series of 6 colonic irrigations at $98 would make a new man of me. He said that we just caught this in time. Since I hesitated about signing up for the treatments, the nurse said that she would be afraid to sleep at night if she had a heart like mine. The doctor repeated the same thing. I gave them a deposit of $10 for the treatment and left. For the record, I have a report from a reputable medical doctor made the same day. He took an electrocardiogram and told me that I'm in perfect health.
But again, what happens to people who are really sick when they are given the cure-all colonic? Here's an example. One of Dr. Brinkley's staff is John R. Osborne, his current advertising director, who previously controlled the clinic. During the period of Osborne's control and practice of the New Yorker treatment, this treatment was given to a patient suffering from an incurable illness. Here is the patient's mother.
My daughter had been ill for many years, and of course we took her to a physician, and they assured me that there is not much cure for epilepsy, but there is control. So I happened to see this ad in the newspaper where they told me that they can absolutely cure this disease. And I brought this girl up, and without any examination, I was told she had parasites, and the removal of parasites, of the parasites, would cure her. First, I was told it would be a matter of 3 or 4 treatments, and it went on to about 30 or 40 treatments at a great expenditure, which was between $600 and $800. In fact, it took every penny I had, but it was absolutely nothing but a colonic treatment. And for many months we had kept it up. I was still assured that the girl would be well, and of course I was at the end of my rope and was willing to do anything to cure the girl. It was just seemed impossible for me to go on any longer, and so I tried to take her life and mine, but evidently the good Lord needed me for something else. But colonics would never do anything to control this disease. It's one of those very unfortunate cases, and we should never permit such quackery as has been practiced on my daughter to exist.
You have heard 2 cases, the naturopath, the colonics man. Here are practitioners recommending quick universal cures, and by actual statement or by implication, guaranteeing these cures. And here in these cases, there is a factor that is different from the Gaudielis or the Drowns. For here, there is no element of interstate commerce. These activities are conducted within state lines. Aren't the state laws strong enough? We talk with many state officials in many states. We ask the same question, Are the state laws strong enough? And here, in one medical examiner's reply, is a summation of what most of them expressed.
I would perhaps break that down into two parts. First, is the law specific enough to take care of those people? Or secondly, if the law is specific enough, are there enough facilities for the enforcement of those laws? Well, you still wind up with the resultant fact that our present laws are apparently, our present laws and their enforcement are apparently not meeting the ill or the need.
Most people know very little about the techniques and language of psychologists. There's a kind of mystical veil for most laymen that hangs over man's mind and its workings. True, legitimate psychologists have developed a scientific language to meet their working requirements. The psycho quack has stolen that language to meet his requirements. You'll see what we mean when you hear this next hidden microphone tape recording after we take a 15-second pause for station identification. This is the CBS Radio Network. This is Bill Downs again, and the CBS Radio Feature Project report, The Quacks. Let's listen to the tape recording of the psycho quack. It was made with a hidden microphone by one of our reporters who allowed himself to become a patient. He complained of loss of memory and of earache. The quack, who called himself a personologist, put one hand on our reporter's right shoulder and the other hand on the left shoulder. This conversation was recorded.
This is Mother. This is Dad. I want to see where the conflict is, because it's a conflict between the maternal and the paternal characteristics. There's a cause for all this, and I've pretty near got the cause now. You got thyroid and parathyroid glands on each side here.
Is that bad?
These glands are very enlarged. See, these cells are not getting blood. Now point your finger like this at my left eye. That one. Now your other hand.
I can tell you, first of all, that I can help you to overcome the headaches, the blackout, and the mental block that you get when you're under pressure. That is, I can show you how to help yourself. It isn't a matter of medicine. It isn't a matter of operations. It's a matter of restoring the natural order. You see, you take after your mother's side of the family. I do.
Yes. And your mother's side of the family is represented in your left side of the body. Every time something happens so that you're not getting a natural and a free flow of blood, so the blood is stopped here or over here, see, then how could you expect to get any intelligence out? You have what we call a mixed dominance. It will be a matter of your going through certain practices to develop your adroitness and hand dexterity, and taking a diet supplement to relieve the pressure here.
Will that cure me of temporary amnesia?
That will cure you of temporary amnesia and of headaches and of earaches, and it will free your flow of words so that always you will have a lot more self-confidence than you've ever had in your life. And then you will see, and I will see what your abnormalities are and what your subnormalities are, and we'll take them one at a time.
What's the difference between an abnormality and a subnormality?
Well, one is below norm, the other is above norm.
If you're abnormal and above normal, you're all right then, and that is that.
No, if you're abnormal, then you're ready to crack up on some subject.
How about if you're subnormal?
Well, then you've lost some of your marbles. You haven't lost any of your marbles. None whatever. I can assure you now that I can help you, and in 6 weeks you'll be all right. You will do what I tell you to do. I will teach you several things to do. For instance, when you take a rubber ball, you bounce a rubber ball with your left hand, for instance. I'm going to develop your left-handedness. You'll take a diet supplement to feed your thyroid glands.
Tell me, why would you want to develop my left-handedness?
Because your mother's side is your left side, and your left side is under the dominion of the right brain hemisphere.
These exercises I'll take, one will be to develop my left-handedness. What are some of the others?
Learn to write with your left hand. That's the biggest job you have, learn to write with your left hand.
That's important.
Well, that's essential. That's essential.
It is also essential to know what the personologist did not know, that our reporter has been left-handed since birth. We took the recording you just heard to Dr. Lawrence F. Schaffer of Teachers College, Columbia University, and president of the American Psychological Association. He listened to it and reacted.
The public needs laws for protection against quacks who call themselves psychologists. We have reason to believe that there are actually more quacks than there are qualified psychologists in practice. In states that have certification or licensing laws for psychologists, you can tell a properly qualified psychologist by seeing if he is legally certified. These are the seven signs of a psychological quack. They advertise, they brag about themselves, they talk about their other clients, they are likely to give fake physical examinations, they pretend to explain your symptoms to you at length and with a great deal of apparently technical language. They claim to use secret methods that other people cannot use. And they promise to cure you within a specified period of time or for a certain amount of money. There is real danger in going to a quack. First, you spend your time and money and build up your hopes on a method that will not really help you. Even more seriously, the victim of a quack may depend on him while a condition that needs competent treatment gets worse and worse. If you are quite sure that you need to see a psychologist, perhaps the best first step is to get in touch with the head of the psychology department at the nearest university. In some instances, the psychology department will be able to put you in touch with a good community clinic or with a psychologist who can offer help. In other cases, it can refer you to the secretary of the state psychological association in your state or to some other useful source of information.
One of the most vicious types of charlatan is the quack who claims or guarantees complete cure to the victims of cancer. The Food and Drug Administration says that such a man is one of the most difficult to put out of business. The FDA is currently trying to prevent several cancer quacks from operating. We'll follow one of these cases as an example of the legal problems which the Food and Drug Administration must meet to enforce the federal laws. Because this case is now pending in federal court, all identifications are omitted. Dr. Gordon Granger, medical officer of the FDA in Washington, D.C., tape reports the background of this case.
This man's formal education terminated during the eighth grade. He claims to have obtained a high school diploma in 1917, after having taken a correspondence course. Between 1917 and 1923, he worked in coal mines and rode insurance. And about 1924, he began to promote his cancer treatment. He used two types of medicine, one a black or brown mixture, the other a pink mixture. He sold these medicines from state to state, claiming they would cure cancer. During his career as a practitioner, he has been convicted three times for practicing medicine without a license. He moved to another state, and there, too, he was permanently enjoined by the courts from violating the State Medical Practice Act. He moved once again to a third state. Here he set up a cancer clinic. It was in a small building with meager equipment. At that time, the fee for his treatment was $300. Business expanded, and the clinic moved to a more fashionable location where much larger and more elaborate quarters were available. His fee rose to $400 per patient. It was later testified that one single practitioner in that clinic personally examined and treated 35 to 50 patients per day. By 1950, the federal government had found, through investigation of the clinic, that the medicines were being shipped across state lines. It was the government's contention that the claim that this medicine would cure cancer was false and misleading. In the winter of 1950, the United States of America filed suit against this individual to prevent interstate shipments of this medicine as a cancer cure.
What are these medicines which were claimed to cure cancer? Here is a chemical analysis of the brown and the pink mixtures. The voice is Dr. Frank H. Wiley, chief of the Division of Pharmaceutical Chemistry, United States Food and Drug Administration.
Our factory inspection and the analytical findings of our laboratory indicated that the medicines were of two types, the black or brown medicine and the pink medicine. The black or brown medicine was found to be composed of a mixture of cascara sagrada, in common terms, cascara, potassium iodide, extracts of buckthorn, prickly ash, red clover blossom, alfalfa, sugar, and water. The pink remedy is composed chiefly of elixir of lactated pepsin containing variable amounts of potassium iodide.
Dr. Wiley has told us what's in the medicine, but we want to know what effect the medicine has. Does it cure cancer? The government contends that it does not. And among the more than 50 qualified medical and scientific experts who testified in the trial was Dr. Max A. Goldsier, New York pathologist.
I do not believe that any reputable physician would use this mixture for the treatment of cancer. The majority of the ingredients in this mixture is completely inert and has no effect whatsoever, not only on cancer, but on any other illness. There are two ingredients which have some effect. Cascara sagrada is a mild laxative, but no other property of this compound is known. Potassium iodide is an important remedy used by many physicians for a variety of diseases, but to my knowledge, it has never been used by a reputable physician for the cure of cancer. Quite to the contrary, we have good reason to believe that potassium iodide is actually harmful if given to a cancer patient. I transplanted cancer on mice which were fed a high potassium diet. These mice all died very soon from cancer.
Although the government felt that this medicine was a menace to public health, the trial was mainly concerned only with how the bottles were labeled. The question was not, could the medicine be sold, but rather, could the practitioner claim he was selling a cure for cancer? The government asked the court to prevent the interstate shipment of this medicine if it was labeled as a cancer cure. The court denied the petition, and the government appealed to a higher court. What happened there? W.W. Goodrich, legal consultant for the FDA, sums it up.
We won the case. The decision of that court is particularly important in the future operations against worthless cancer remedies. The court held that there is only one reliable and accurate means of determining whether what is thought to be cancer is actually cancer. That involves a biopsy examination of a piece of tissue removed from the infected or diseased area. The court held further that the opinion of the layman as to whether he has or had cancer, or the like opinion as to whether he had been cured and no longer has the disease, is entitled to very little, if any, weight. Finally, the court held that despite the vast and continuous research that has been conducted into the cause of and possible cure of cancer, there are now known to medical science only the methods of surgery, X-ray, radium, and some of the radioactive byproducts of the atomic bomb production. Winning this case in the Court of Appeals was not the final step, however.
Although the upper court had decided that the medicine could not be labeled as a cancer cure, there is still another legal test now going on. This current proceeding is a technical, legalistic one. There is no telling how long it will go on. But the important thing to be remembered is that no matter what the decision may be in this case, this peddler of cancer cure nostrums will still be free to sell his brown mixture and his pink mixture and call them cancer cures and give those instead of proper medical treatment to innocent people, people like the son of this man.
The year of 1947, my boy got hurt playing football, and we carried him to this hospital. That was on Tuesday, and on Thursday, well, he had an operation. And then he went back for about 22 x-rays. And the boy got down about 145 pounds, and after he come off of that, well, he put him off his crutches and all, he taken those 22 x-ray treatments, well, he gained on up about 168 pounds. So he seemed like he was getting along fine, but at the time then, well, my wife had heard about this clinic, and she's going to take him over and see about that, and so we did. He examined the boy and said, yeah, he could cure the boy, and so he went on in and gave him this black salve and some medicine, liquid medicine, and some big brown tablet. Went on like that, and instead of the boy, you know, I thought he'd be all right. Instead of that, he went to going down. And we carried him back, it was either two or three times, back to this clinic. And he did tell me that the boy was getting along fine. He thought he was could cure him. The boy was getting weaker all the time. I asked him, I says, do you think the boy is getting better? And he says, yes, I do. He said, his blood counts better. Well, he like 1 month today, being 18-year-old when he died.
For this man, this long legal tangle is not important. What is important is that he has lost his son. And now another case. It is called the Koch treatment, K-O-C-H. The Koch treatment consists chiefly of the introduction into the cancer patient of a liquid. This liquid is the brainchild of one William Frederick Koch. The liquid is known as glyoxylide. Mr. Koch, prior to 1948, manufactured and sold and distributed in interstate commerce this glyoxylide treatment. At that time, he claimed, directly or by implication, that glyoxylide was an adequate treatment for any stage or type of cancer. Mr. Koch is not a modest man. He also claimed that his glyoxylide would cure leprosy, malaria, coronary thrombosis, multiple sclerosis, arteriosclerosis, asthma, dementia praecox, epilepsy, polio, tuberculosis, arthritis, insanity, and hay fever. A medicinal preparation for which such remarkable claims are made commands attention. Since glyoxylide is still being manufactured, we ask Dr. Frank H. Wiley, chief of the Pharmaceutical Chemistry Division of the FDA, to give it his attention. He did, and this is his report.
In our laboratory examination of glyoxylide produced by Dr. Koch, we have applied all of the known chemical and physical tests to detect the presence of any material in that preparation. These tests were all negative, indicating that the remedy was composed primarily of distilled water.
Distilled water. Mr. Koch's distilled water, which is known as glyoxylide, has been a matter of concern for Mr. Walter Simmons of the Food and Drug Administration in Chicago.
The cost to make this treatment should be very minimum when you stop to consider that the preparation is distilled water. I wouldn't say that the name would cost over 2 or 3 cents. It winds up in the hands of the practitioner who uses it. In most cases, prices ranging anywhere from $100 up to $500 per shot. And in some places, it's all the traffic will bear. I think a good illustration of that is the case that that was recently terminated in Florida, involving a physician down there who gave the Koch treatment to a patient. In that case, the jury awarded the plaintiff, who sued the doctor for malpractice, $65,000 judgment.
We sent a reporter to Florida. He found the son of the patient mentioned by Mr. Simmons and got his story.
It started from a small place on his the right side of his lower lip, and just began to grow a little round and getting larger. We went to a doctor and they said it was cancer. And my father wanted a cure without an operation. So his friend told us about this other doctor that did have a cure for cancer without surgery. He just looked at it and said it was cancer, and he said, I asked him if he had a cure for it. I heard he had, and he said he did. He said this was a shot that they gave him that supposed to be one shot was supposed to be a cure. We waited till next day because we didn't have the $100. He said it cost $100 anywhere. Then we come back in 6 weeks just for a checkup, see. It was spreading wider over his face. And he said that it would do that, but it was getting thinner and was killing out from the roots. That's the way he told us every time. He said, nothing to worry about. He kept getting worse to where he couldn't eat it to last. And I went to him because I wanted him to be at the hospital. And he told me, as quick as he seen him, he sent him back out in the lobby. And then he called me in and told me there wasn't anything could be done for him anymore, that take him on home, he wouldn't last or wouldn't live but a day or two, and just carry him back home and let him try to make him comfortable if we could.
And the story is completed by the patient's attorney.
Fortunately, they landed in the cancer clinic where he did receive treatment. He lost the whole lower portion of his face, resulting in an amputation of his lower jaw from jawbone to jawbone, and it's hoped that some plastic work can be done so that he can again talk. He hasn't talked now since the operation which was performed on him in 1951.
When we heard that story, we went back to Chicago and to the FDA's Walter Simmons. Again, the pertinent question, how widespread is the use of the Koch treatment?
Close to 3,000 practitioners in the United States using it at the present time. As far as efficacy is concerned, it has absolutely no value. It's inconceivable to think that anything just of a distilled water, nature distilled water, be a cure for anything. It is, however, sold to cure anything under the sun, beginning with the letter A and ending with the letter Z in the alphabet.
In Bethesda, Maryland, is the headquarters of the National Cancer Institute. Dr. J.R. Heller is the director of the institute. Dr. Heller understands that many people may be worried about cancer. He understands that some people who do have cancer may be driven by desperation or misinformation or by lack of knowledge to the cancer quacks. He expresses a warning.
I don't think there's any more despicable character in our society than a quack who preys upon those who have cancer or think they have cancer. Cancer quack is not only a swindler, but he endangers his victim's life as well. Now, early diagnosis and treatment are extremely important in the management of cancer, and valuable time is lost by the person actually suffering from this disease who places himself under the care of a quack. It isn't hard to understand why it's so easy for the cancer quack to find his victims. For instance, a person with cancer who cannot be cured, either because of the nature of his disease or the fact that too much time has been lost in seeking treatment, naturally comes to him. This person feels that his case is hopeless and he'll grasp at a straw or even a cobweb. Even though his reason, his best judgment, tells him that the quack can't help him, he's willing to try anything, so desperate is he. My best advice to everyone is to have regular medical checkups at least once a year and to be alert for signs or symptoms of possible cancer. No one should worry constantly about cancer, but a person who thinks he might have cancer should see his physician. By all means, avoid cancer quacks who advertise their services and their medicines. They can't cure cancer. Most of them cannot even tell whether a person has cancer.
We've met some of the operators of the cure machines, the peddlers of nostrums, the psycho quacks, the cancer cure merchants. Although some of these practitioners we've met tonight have run afoul of the laws, each one of those we mentioned or their treatments are still in operation, and many thousands like them are in operation. Again, we ask why. And we ask it of Mr. Charles W. Crawford, Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration in Washington.
There are thousands of quacks operating today. No disease is too serious for them to promise its cure. Untold numbers of people are being victimized, and we know that the cost in dollars is tremendous. But no one can estimate the cost in human lives, suffering, and disappointment from promised cures that failed. When the Food and Drug Administration brings these frauds into the federal courts, we seek the outstanding medical experts of the country to appear as witnesses. Then we see in the courtroom the age-old struggle between fact and falsehood, between ignorance and knowledge, between superstition and science. This problem is much greater than our ability to deal with it. We have legal authority over only one phase of the problem, the interstate shipment of worthless or dangerous drugs and devices. When this type of medical fraud is carried on wholly within a state, the federal law does not apply. The licensing of physicians, the enforcement of malpractice laws, and of state food and drug laws are all in the hands of state and local authorities. Where laws or their enforcement are out of date or inadequate, it is your high privilege to work for their improvement. For in the last analysis, the biggest part of this job is yours, as a citizen, to take an interest in this health problem and to back up all health and law enforcement agencies in their battle to protect your health and welfare.
There is one other voice we want you to hear. Not because it's connected with any of the cases you've heard about in this report, but because, in a way, we think it summarizes the experience and the pressures and the implications of this whole subject of quack cures.
I picked up a newspaper, and it stated that there a doctor who could, that he specialized in that particular ailment, and that he could show proof that he had cured people before, and I thought we ought to see him. When the man is sick and he sees that he's going downhill, he'll give everything in order to save his life, regardless of what it cost or how, and you try yourself. And really, a wife that loves her husband the same way, because without him, life is not, it's not worth living. The children are his, right? And another man couldn't love those children the way he did. And I couldn't love another man the way I loved him. He was just for me, and I was for him. And the children were ours, and we loved each other. And so we tried everywhere we could. But to land up in a place like that sanatorium and then be knocked around and not having the, if they knew they couldn't help him, why couldn't they just say so? He was there 8 days when they took him away to a mortuary.
This has been The Quacks, the fifth in CBS Radio's feature project series. Tonight, produced with the cooperation of the United States Food and Drug Administration, you heard a report of a full-scale, factual investigation. Tape recorded across the country by more than 25 CBS Radio Feature Project reporters. The Quacks, a report on charlatan practitioners and quack cures, was produced by David Moore with the assistance of Don Kellerman, Arthur Patterson, and Ted Hanna. Original music by Ben Ludlow was conducted by Alfredo Antony. CBS Radio expresses its grateful acknowledgement to Commissioner Charles W. Crawford and his staff of the United States Food and Drug Administration for their cooperation and help. These full-hour reports are brought to you as part of CBS Radio's continuing service in the public interest and are supervised by Stuart Novins.
There's music in the air, usually heard at this time over most of these stations, was not heard tonight because of the special preceding broadcast. This is the CBS Radio Network.